Lesson 2. Outcomes. Explain types of protective clothing worn at hazardous materials incidents. Protective clothing overview. Protective clothing must be worn whenever an emergency responder faces potential hazards arising from thermal hazards and chemical, biological, or radiological exposure. Skin contact with hazardous materials can cause a variety of problems, including chemical burns, allergic reactions and rashes, diseases, and absorption of toxic materials into the body. Protective clothing is designed to prevent these problems. Body armor and bomb suits can be worn to protect against ballistic hazards and shrapnel from explosives, Figure 26.11. No single combination or ensemble of protective equipment, even with respiratory protection, can protect against all hazards. For example, fumes and chemical vapors can penetrate firefighting turnout coats and pants, so the protection they provide is not complete. Similarly, chemical protective clothing, CPC, offers no protection from fires, Figure 26.12. An appropriate PPE ensemble protects the skin, eyes, face, hearing, hands, feet, body, head, and respiratory system. While technological advances are being made to improve the versatility of all types of PPE, for example, developing more chemical-resistant turnouts and more fire-resistant CPC, you must understand your PPE's limitations in order to stay safe. Using your PPE correctly requires special training and instruction. When operating at an incident scene, use your PPE in accordance with standard operating procedures and manufacturer's recommendations, under the guidance of a hazardous materials technician, or under the supervision of an allied professional, someone with the knowledge, skills, and competence to provide correct guidance, as appropriate. The sections that follow explain the various standards that apply to protective clothing as well as the different clothing types that will commonly be used at hazmat/WMD incidents. Standards for protective clothing and equipment at hazmat/WMD incidents. As with respiratory protection, the Health Canada, DHS, has adopted NIOSH and NFPA standards for protective clothing used at hazmat/WMD incidents. Primarily, these apply to clothing worn at chemical and biological incidents in regards to chemical protective clothing, CPC. However, you should be familiar with any standards pertaining to design, certification, and testing requirements of any type of protective clothing, including body armor, structural fire fighting gear, and bomb suits. Depending on their location, responders may also need to be familiar with standards regarding respiratory equipment issued by the ISO, the European Union, or other authorities. Structural firefighting protective clothing. Structural firefighting clothing is not a substitute for chemical protective clothing, however, it does provide some protection against many hazardous materials. The atmospheres in burning buildings, after all, are filled with toxic gases, and modern structural firefighters' protective clothing with SCBA provides adequate protection against some of those hazards, Figure 26.13. The multiple layers of the coat and pants may provide short-term exposure protection from such materials as liquid chemicals, however, there are limitations to this protection. For example, structural firefighting clothing is neither corrosive-resistant nor vapor-tight. Liquids can soak through, acids and bases can dissolve or deteriorate the outer layers, and gases and vapors can penetrate the garment, Figure 26.14. Gaps in structural firefighting clothing occur at the neck, wrists, waist, and the point where the pants and boots overlap. Some hazardous materials can permeate, pass through at the molecular level, and remain in structural firefighting clothing. Chemicals absorbed into the equipment can cause repeated exposure or a later reaction with another chemical. In addition, chemicals can permeate the rubber, leather or neoprene in boots, gloves, knee pads, and SCBA facepieces, making them unsafe to use. It may be necessary to discard equipment exposed to permeating chemicals. While there is much debate among experts as to the degree of protection provided by structural firefighting protective clothing, and SCBA, at hazmat/WMD incidents, there may be circumstances under which it will provide limited protection for short-term duration operations such as an immediate rescue, Figure 26.15. Agency emergency response plans and SOPs should specify the conditions and circumstances under which it is appropriate for emergency responders to rely on firefighter structural protective clothing and SCBA during operations at hazmat/WMD incidents. Structural firefighting protective clothing will provide protection against thermal damage in an explosive attack, but it provides limited or no protection against projectiles, shrapnel, and other mechanical effects from a blast. It will provide adequate protection against some types of radiological materials, but not others. In cases where biological agents are strictly respiratory hazards, structural firefighting protective clothing with SCBA may provide adequate protection. However, in any case where skin contact is potentially hazardous, it is not sufficient. Properly identify materials in order to make this determination. Anytime a terrorist attack is suspected, assume that responders are wearing only structural firefighting protective clothing with SCBA and are at some level of increased risk from potential hazards such as explosives, radiological materials, and chemical or biological weapons. High temperature protective clothing. High temperature protective clothing is designed to protect the wearer from short-term exposures to high temperatures in situations where heat levels exceed the capabilities of standard firefighting protective clothing. This type of clothing is usually of limited use in dealing with chemical hazards. The following are two types of high-temperature clothing that are available. Proximity suits permit close approach to fires for rescue, fire suppression, and property conservation activities such as aircraft rescue and firefighting or other firefighting operations involving flammable liquids, Figure 26.16. Such suits provide greater heat protection than standard structural firefighting protective clothing. Fire entry suits allow a person to work in total flame environments for short periods of time, provide short duration and close proximity protection at radiant heat temperatures as high as 2000 degrees Fahrenheit, 1100 degrees Celsius. Each suit has a specific use. There are several limitations to high temperature protective clothing. Contributes to heat stress by not allowing the body to release excess heat. Is bulky. Limits wearer's vision. Limits wearer's mobility. Limits communication. Requires frequent and extensive training for efficient and safe use. Is expensive to purchase. Integrity of suit is designed for limited exposure time. Chemical protective clothing, CPC. The purpose of chemical protective clothing, CPC, is to shield or isolate individuals from the chemical, physical, and biological hazards that may be encountered during hazardous materials operations. CPC is made from a variety of different materials, none of which protects against all types of chemicals. Each material provides protection against certain chemicals or products, but only limited or no protection against others. The manufacturer of a particular suit must provide a list of chemicals for which the suit is effective. Selection of appropriate CPC depends on the specific chemical and on the specific tasks to be performed by the wearer. CPC is designed to afford the wearer a known degree of protection from a known type, concentration, and length of exposure to a hazardous material, but only if it is fitted properly and worn correctly. Improperly fitted or worn equipment can expose and endanger the wearer. Most protective clothing is designed to be impermeable to moisture, thus limiting the transfer of heat from the body through natural evaporation. This can contribute to heat disorders in hot environments. Regardless of the type of CPC worn at an incident, it must be decontaminated. Responders who may be called upon to wear CPC must be familiar with, and comfortable going through, their local procedures for technical decontamination. Design and testing standards generally recognize two types of CPC. Liquid splash protective clothing. Vapor protective clothing. The sections that follow describe these two types and explains operations where CPC is required. Written management programs that specify CPC use. Ways in which CPC can be damaged. Considerations for the service life of CPCG2. Liquid splash protective clothing. Liquid splash protective clothing is designed to protect users from chemical liquid splashes but not against chemical vapors or gases, Figure 26.17. NFPA 1992 sets the minimum design criteria for one type of liquid splash protective clothing. Liquid splash protective clothing can be encapsulating or non-encapsulating, figure 26.18. An encapsulating suit is a single, one-piece garment that protects against splashes or, in the case of vapor protective encapsulating suits, also against vapors and gases. Boots and gloves are sometimes separate, or attached and replaceable. Two primary limitations to fully encapsulating suits are as follows. Impairs worker mobility, vision, and communication. Traps body heat, which might necessitate a cooling system, particularly when SCBA is worn. A non-encapsulating suit commonly consists of a one-piece coverall but sometimes is composed of individual pieces, such as a jacket, hood, pants, or bib overalls. Limitations to non-encapsulating suits include the following. Protects against splashes and dusts but not against gases and vapors. Does not provide full body coverage, parts of head and neck are often exposed. Traps body heat and contributes to heat stress. Encapsulating and non-encapsulating liquid splash protective clothing are not resistant to heat or flames, nor do they protect against projectiles or shrapnel. Liquid splash protective clothing is made from the same materials used for vapor protective suits, see following section. When used as part of a protective ensemble, liquid splash protective ensembles may include an SCBA, an airline, supplied air respirator, SAR, or a full-face, air-purifying, canister-equipped respirator. This type of protective clothing is also a component of EPA-level B chemical protection ensembles. Vapor protective clothing. Vapor protective clothing protects the wearer against chemical vapors or gases and offers a greater level of protection than liquid splash protective clothing, figure 26.19. NFPA 1991 specifies requirements for a minimum level of protection for response personnel facing exposure to specified chemicals. This standard sets performance requirements for vapor-tight, totally encapsulating chemical protective, TCP, suits and includes rigid chemical resistance and flame resistance tests and a permeation test against 21 challenge chemicals. NFPA 1991 also includes standards for performance tests in simulated conditions. Vapor protective ensembles must be worn with positive pressure SCBA or combination SCBA/SAR. Vapor protective ensembles are components of ensembles to be used at chemical and biological hazmat/WMD incidents. These suits are also primarily used as part of a Level A protective ensemble, providing the greatest degree of protection against respiratory, eye, or skin damage from hazardous vapors, gases, particulates, sudden splash, immersion, or contact with hazardous materials. Vapor protective suits have the following limitations. When exposed to fire, they melt and burn. They cannot be used in potentially flammable atmospheres. Do not protect the user against all chemical hazards. Impair mobility, vision, and communication, figure 26.20. Do not allow body heat to escape, so can contribute to heat stress, which may require the use of a cooling vest. Vapor protective ensembles are made from a variety of special materials. No single combination of protective equipment and clothing is capable of protecting a person against all hazards. Mission-specific operations requiring use of chemical protective clothing. Chemical protective clothing must be worn in certain circumstances. Without regard to the level of training required to perform them, these are operations that may require the use of CPC. Site survey. Rescue. Spill mitigation. Emergency monitoring. Decontamination. Evacuation. If responders are involved in any of these activities, consideration must be given to what type of protective equipment is necessary given the known and/or unknown hazards present at the scene. Always follow AHJ SOPs for operations requiring use of chemical protective clothing. Written management programs. All emergency response organizations that routinely use CPC must establish a written chemical protective clothing program and respiratory protection management program. A written management program includes policy statements, procedures, and guidelines. Copies must be made available to all personnel who may use CPC in their job. The two basic objectives of any management program are protecting the user from safety and health hazards and preventing injury to the user from incorrect use or malfunction. To accomplish these goals, a comprehensive CPC management program includes the following elements: hazard identification, medical monitoring, environmental surveillance, selection, care, testing, and maintenance, training, permeation, process in which a chemical passes through a protective material on a molecular level, permeation, degradation, and penetration. Permeation is a process that occurs when a chemical passes through a fabric on a molecular level, figure 26.21. In most cases, there is no visible evidence of chemicals permeating a material, figures 26.22a and b. The rate at which a compound permeates CPC depends on factors such as the chemical properties of the compound, nature of the protective barriers in the CPC, and concentration of the chemical on the surface of the CPC. Most CPC manufacturers provide charts on breakthrough time it takes for a chemical to permeate the material of a protective suit, for a wide range of chemical compounds. Permeation data also includes information about the permeation rate, or the speed, at which the chemical moves through the CPC material after it breaks through. Chemical degradation. Process that occurs when the characteristics of a material are altered through contact with chemical substances. Chemical degradation occurs when a material's characteristics are altered through contact with chemical substances. Examples include cracking, brittleness, and other changes in the structural characteristics of the garment, figure 26.23. The most common material degradation indicators are discoloration, swelling, loss of physical strength, or deterioration. Penetration is a process that occurs when a hazardous material enters an opening or a puncture in a protective material, figure 26.24. Rips, tears, and cuts in protective materials, as well as unsealed seams, buttonholes, and zippers, are considered penetration failures. Often such openings are the result of faulty manufacture or problems with the design of the suit. Service life. Penetration, process in which a hazardous material enters an opening or puncture in a protective material. Each piece of CPC has a specific service life over which the clothing is able to adequately protect the wearer. For example, a coverall, covering the wearer's torso, arms, and legs, intended for liquid splash protection, may be designed for a single use. All potentially contaminated CPC requires proper decontamination when the wearer leaves a potentially hazardous area. Always follow AHJ SOPs and manufacturer's specifications in regards to serviceability, use, and reuse.